ideas are intriguing to me, and I wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
Coaches, welcome to the Talking Split podcast. Once again, I am Rob Colder, joined by high performance coach for the country women, Zoe Carr. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Basketball development officer, Nick Mihai, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Can I just say that it's so good that we're never going to run out of Simpsons quotes to drop on the intro. There's so many of them.
I've got to tell you, it's the more I go through it, the more it's like, geez, I've nearly got line for line of Bart Starr from the Simpsons yeah. episode in every podcast so far. It's just so relatable more than anything else. But if you are an avid listener to the Talking Split podcast, if you can give a like, share, rating, review, all the fun things on your designated platform that you would listen to this on. A reminder that we also have drills and content going up on the Instagram and the X pages at Talking Split is the handle. I've only just realized that, you know how I sort of say, hey, you slide in the DM, send us anything. I've only just realized there's like a requests tab in the direct messages in Instagram. So it turns out people have been sending us stuff and I've been ignoring it. So if you have sent me something previously, by the time this episode drops, I will have replied. Not social media savvy, as it turns out. There is no coach shout out this week, which enthuses Zoe Carr the most. But if you do have any coach shout outs, you're obviously able to send those ones in, and we'll have a little bit of a play around with, you know, how we can get more and more coaches in that space and getting the recognition that they absolutely deserve as well. So if you do have anything, by all means, slide into the DMs now that I know how they work, and I'll be able to help you out on that one. What we are talking about today, though, is a paper that came out. So this was recommended to us by Coach Funds, who interacts with us a little bit on X. Them I am actually pretty good at replying to, as it turns out. But Luka Doncic Foundation has published a paper, or commissioned a paper, called Inside Youth Basketball. And effectively it's a study from players in the Balkans and players in the United States about what does basketball look like in the various environments, how could it be better, what sort of things should they focus on. And they've come up with the total hoops approach, which is 8 dot points that they really feel like they could lean into, which we're going to unpack a little bit today. So what I will do is I'll put the link for this paper in the show notes, so that anyone that wants to download that can download it. There was also an episode of the Mind the Game podcast, which is Steve Nash, LeBron, and Luka Doncic was on there, and they were talking about this paper in particular and how development looks different in all manners of the world in sport and for junior athletes in particular. Obviously, LeBron came up through the American system, Steve Nash came up through the Canadian system, and Luka came through the Slovenian system. So they've all got a really unique perspective on all of this. So I would recommend going having listened to the Mind the Game podcast as well. But part of this came about because the stats show that 70% of kids drop out of sport by age 13. And that is an alarmingly early number to be leaving the sport. I mean, obviously, we want to create kids that stay in the sport forever, and it's a lifelong thing that they have. But for 70% of kids to drop out of the sport, that is alarming. Now, that may lead into, I mean, there's probably a debate of should they start sport later, you know, which, when they've worked out what they actually want to do, is that just organized sport? Is that not the casual sport to pick up those sorts of things as well? So there's a different sort of slant that you can take with that. But a couple of the statistics that really stood out for me, 61% of parents think that their kids are healthier because of basketball. And 1 in 2 parents believe that their child is a better person overall because of basketball. And so that for me is fairly telling straight away that, and look, we've spoken about it before when we've spoken about multi-sport athletes and going away from early specialization into a certain sport, that we do sort of think basketball is kind of the niche, the best of all worlds, because you can be an individual, you can be team, you know, all those sorts of things as well. But it was really interesting reading through the paper, and we're not going to dissect this thing page by page by any stretch, but we are going to talk about the 8 main points in the total hoops approach. But one of the things that stood out to me, 38% of Slovenian parents agreed that coaches prioritize winning over development and over developing well-rounded players. But what many don't realize is that their children's coaches are caught in the same trap, which is forced to choose between player development and job security. And when we really sort of break that down, and obviously the people we're talking to on this podcast are at a varying level. There are the parents that just enjoy hearing more basketball stuff, which we appreciate them. Continue to listen. That's fantastic of you. There are the domestic parents that just want their kid to be active and doing stuff. There are the representative level parents that are like, well, look, you know, we want our kids pushed a little bit. There are coaches within both of those cohorts as well, where it's, if you're a domestic parent, you're just hoping to get through every week without a major blow up at times, without even having the maybe the skill set or the knowledge to be able to develop kids in the right manner or fashion or anything like that. And they're obviously sort of the senior cohort as well, which, you know, potentially listening for content, or would that relate back to them when they were a player? So we understand that we sort of hit at a varying level as well as to what we'll talk about. So we will bounce around a little bit as we go through this. The first one of the Total Hoops approach, development with purpose. So when you hear that, Zoe, like, what jumps to mind, I suppose, straight off the bat from a development with purpose perspective?
The first thing that jumps to mind for me is that it's different for every athlete. If you're going to be purposeful, it can't be cookie cutter. It has to be individualized. You know, I understand that we have, especially a lot of the coaches listening, have restrictions on, you know, you might only have half a court for 45 minutes and that sort of stuff, and you want to work on ball handling because you've got majority guards. but you've got one athlete that's tall and long and, you know, and when I say tall, like a genuine big. Yes, get them involved in that, in the ball handling stuff and working from the perimeter. But changing your drill to what they need also so they can be successful in the game. I think we get a little caught up on making everything the same for everyone. And it's one of the things I noticed, one of the drills that we put up was the one, it was a while ago, 1v2 ball handling in the backcourt. So one offense, two defenders. There's somebody at halfway line. When they put their hands up, they've got to, off the bounce, make the pass on the full against two defenders. I was making girls that have only ever played in the five do that drill and wondering why it was taking so long to get through.
But I think there's an age-specific part of this too. Like, you are dealing with under-16s and under-18 kids who probably, if they aren't what they are, they're very close to being.
In girls, they're probably close to done growing, or if they've got another growth spurt to go, it's
minimal.
Going to send them from a 3 to a 5.
Yeah, like, so their position is not quite locked in, but it's close. Whereas if you were doing that with, say, an under-10s team, have everyone do
it. Of course.
Like, that's great.
Of course. So I've changed how that operates now, in that, you know, they still have to do some ball handling stuff, but not under that immense pressure because they're not ready for that yet. So I'm setting them up to fail. So a different type of ball handling drill so they can still, you know, if they don't grow to the size of being a legitimate center, it's easier to try and transition them. But
it's sometimes good to just transition them anyway, even if they are bigger, right?
Yeah, like, give them a bit of perspective on what it actually looks like and feels like.
Yeah.
Like when they're getting annoyed that they're not getting the ball on the post. It's like, okay, you try and pass it in there. Let's see how hard this is.
But also, though, like, we talk all the time as coaches. I'm probably going a little off track here.
Well, this has started well. Point one.
It's Nick and me.
As soon as I chime in, it takes a strong left turn, doesn't it?
I often hear, when I'm talking to coaches, one of their biggest frustrations is their bigs don't know how to be big. Well, that's because we spend all our time teaching them how to be guards. Like, I understand we've got to try and make them, give them the best opportunity to move forward, and if they're not that big, and, you know, there's all of that. But I have athletes that from a, at the moment, the way their limbs work and the way their body is structured, they're not going to be successful on the perimeter. Like, it's not that we keep them away from that, but if I do no work with them in the paint, where does their game go? It goes nowhere because they step onto the floor, they're then thrown in the paint, coaches get frustrated with them because they don't know what they're doing in there, and then, or they're not, you know, they can't handle the physicality, or they can't handle the footwork, or, you know, any, they can't finish. We haven't then set them up for that success. And then we get upset with them when they can't do it, and then we lose them. And so I think there's got to be, when we talk, just circling back to, I guess, the original question.
That'd be nice, yep.
If we talk about purposeful development, it's got to be for where you want them to get to is fine, try and forecast, but where are they now as well? And how can we set them up for success? I've got some athletes that we're transitioning at the moment because we think they're done growing and they're not going to be big if they want to step to the next level. So we're trying to transition them down the line a little bit. But when it comes to maybe trialing for a state team, they're not ready yet for that position that we're working towards. So they won't make the team if we trial them in that position.
I think this is age relative too, though. Because, I mean, my mind straight away, and you went a different direction. I thought you were going to talk holistically and you went more sort of 16s, 18s and older. I'm thinking younger again, and I'm looking through the notes in particular. And it's like, well, fundamentals training for all positions, regardless of height. Now, fundamentals doesn't mean that your tallest player needs to be able to make a three dribble crossover or put the ball on the floor in the backcourt. Sometimes for them, fundamentals might be catching and pivoting.
Catch and pivot, yeah.
But that might be part of fundamentals in particular. Like, Nick, what sort of stood out to you when we were going through this?
Definitely the development with purpose was the first one that you were speaking about. Really resonated with me in terms of teaching the skill and then can they replicate it and perform it in a game-like situation. I've always been a fan of kids learning multiple. And again, it's different age group. Like I would say, 16, 17-year-olds, they kind of have figured it out. But I spent a lot of my junior coaching time in the 14s, in the bottom age 16s, that sort of era. So if I pigeonholed some of those kids, potentially they wouldn't have had as much success as well. And the opportunity to figure out what their strength is. Like if I just go, you're a four, and for the next 2 to 3 years I keep them in the four position and that's all they play, then that could potentially be an issue as well. So development with purpose is a big one for me. I'm very much like the gameplay. Purposeful practice is always the wording that I like to use as well. But, that's probably the one that resonated with me just because there's a lot of 5-on-0 happening during midweek sessions. An example would be if you teach just wide open layups and expect them to make a layup in the game in traffic, it's two different shots. Okay, so what's the purpose that you're trying to achieve?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you go down the what it looks like on the list that they put together here, practice sessions emphasizing proper technique in passing, dribbling, and off-ball movement. So, again, I think there's a lot that we can do in that space.
But when you talk about the younger age groups, sort of 12s, 14s,
that's all it
like
really
for
should
me,
be.
I'm an advocate for like five out.
Yep.
Like everyone bring the ball down the floor at some point, you know, everybody do all of that. But as you get older, now you've got to start. I think as you get older, you've got to start them being purposeful in their development in where you forecast they're going to actually be if they were to take that next step.
Yeah, and I mean, when we talk technique, my mind doesn't immediately go to running offenses as such. No. Like five, like technique for mine is the skill set and the actual functional body movements that they can put in place to be able to move as an adult as well. Like, can you come to a stop quickly when you're moving at a rapid rate? Because you might have to do that as someone cuts you off walking across the road when the light goes green. And always cross when the light goes green. Okay, so that might be a purposeful part of it because we're also teaching to be humans and adults and have a successful life away from basketball, which we touch on a little bit later. So when I sort of think of that, I more think of, hey, is the technique correct? Now, it's not that all techniques have to look the same. That's absolutely not the case. But there are some commonalities, I think, with certain skills. You know, we don't dribble the basketball with our palm. Like, as an example, like it's going to be in your fingertips more often. So those types of fundamental teachings, I think, are important in that sort of space. Number two, and Nick's going to get a little bit of insight into this purely because it's become his job now and not necessarily my job, no zone defense or pressing until players master individual defense. Like, it is one of those things that it is the absolute hack. If you want to be successful as a young coach, and when I say a young coach, coach of young people, press. Because you're playing into the inefficiencies of players that haven't quite worked out, hey, you know, how do I manipulate the ball well? How is my body shape? Can I make a pass across my body, off the bounce? Those types of things. It's going to be successful. Similarly, zoning in the younger age groups will be successful because people at that age cannot shoot from the perimeter. There is limited post play. They can't throw pass fakes, those types of things. So defensively, get them better at individual defense, accountable defense in particular. That's the biggest thing we're seeing, Nick.
Yeah, it's a big one. Like I get asked this a lot more than I should when I do these. It's to me it's ridiculous. And I definitely, like, I'm not saying that I'm a saint. I was one that did zone.
Yep.
In under 14s.
We've all been through it.
Right? Yeah. And it's the benefits of teaching man-to-man defense. And when we talk about man-to-man, it's not just everyone match up and figure it out. It's what you do off the ball as well. If you can learn to play in between your player and the ball, you've taught them such a skill.
Yep. Awareness.
That if they end up with, like, in front of Zoe now and they see that at, like, let's say FTP, let's say really young age groups, you're like, wow, she's onto something here.
Yep.
But that's also something that you're now teaching them. And again, because I'm going to relate a lot of this stuff back to life in general, teaching them to see the ball and see their player is no different to having to do a head check when they're driving a car. Mm-hmm. It's the same skill. You have to be aware of what is going on around you and where you need to be at that point in time. So again, the teaching zones and presses, like if, and again, this will be a hotly contested topic, but I would rather see structured presses go away in 12s and 14s for mine. Like, I would rather them play in a matchup and be structured in that. Now, I don't think that's ever going to happen, but for mine,
I think at least for under 12s.
Yeah.
At least for under 12s, because they mainly the under 12s are the ones who can't physically pass through the press.
Yeah.
And you need that as an option. 14s are starting to get a little bit bigger.
They're figuring it out.
But even then, you can make an argument for not there as well.
It is. But how much time do our coaches need to spend on press breaks, where they're not teaching fundamental skills and footwork and those types of things, because they're all worried about tactics as to how to beat the press of this team that we're playing against? That doesn't create a better basketball. Like, it'll get a team a win that presses and does nothing but press. But it's amazing how many times when those teams can't press and they can't get in their structure stuff, you watch them defend in the half court and it's horrible. Like, they cannot stay in front of the ball, their positioning is awful, that sort of stuff. So when you look at it from a team perspective, try and get them to a position where they are accountable for their own individual skills, but can also fit within the function of a team, I think is part of that.
Well, and I think we've only spoken about what it does from a defensive perspective. That zoning, and I understand that it's not your job to worry about the other team, but I'd like to think in the basketball community, we care about basketball and what's best for basketball. And it was one of the things that drove me mental, which really sparked me to write the paper for banning zones in under 12s, which was I was spending all this time on technique, shot technique, and the fundamental of shooting in bottom age under 12s team that I was coaching.
Which is a good investment.
Which is a good investment.
Like, no problem with that.
There was no point, because we were only seeing zones, so the only shot that was available to them was too far outside of their strength to shoot it with technique. So it was a waste of time. And so it was, you know, the defensive advantages of matching up is incredible. But on the other side, the offensive advantages are there as well. And, you know, we should be having kids learn when they can put the ball to the floor and get into gaps and score. And against the zone, they're not there, especially when they're that young. So, yeah, it's a big one. That one's close to my heart.
But another selling point for that as well is as you go higher and you go to those pro leagues, they're doing it less and less. They're using it as a change-up. Don't get me wrong. It's definitely a part of the game.
It is. But it's there for like a possession.
Correct.
And then it's gone away again.
I'm going to zone for the whole game, whereas those younger age groups.
I think you're valuing winning over developing. Like if you're a press and a zone coach early on.
But then when you circle back to your points at the start that are in this paper about coaches being caught in the trap of
job security.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's not so much job security probably at, say, like a VJBL or domestic level. It's probably self-preservation, because when you're winning, generally the voices go quiet.
Yep.
And so then everything's okay.
Yeah.
Definitely for VJBL, I can tell you. Like if you do not achieve what you need to achieve, you may not get a first team again.
Yeah, but even
mentality is one we have to shift.
Yeah.
Big time. Like, I'm not saying it's right. Yeah. I'm saying that's what's out there.
But we've got to shift it on a landscape level.
Mm. Yep.
We've got to shift it from our clubs and associations, because you know they want to be able to say they've got, you know, teams in the Classic or teams in VC Finals or teams in the... And I understand that too.
Yeah, it's a good selling point for your program, and it's a nice recognition.
And they don't want their players to leave. And, yeah. and that is a reality yeah. in the VJBL. Yeah. If I don't get enough teams into VC or in the Classic, they're going to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Yep. But it's also our parent fraternity needs to understand as well that, you know, if development is the main focus, win or lose, that's where you need to be. And I'd love to see parents making their decisions on where they take their child based on that rather than based on, oh, they've got an NBL1 program or they've got, you know, the most teams in VC or the most teams in this and the most teams in that or they've got all these coaches and doesn't matter how many coaches they've got. If it's about winning over development, yeah, you'll go in there and you'll probably win some games, but what next?
Well, and the hard part is how do we get a critical mass, I suppose, all on the same page with this? And it's something that we at BV need to do probably a better job of as well, is selling the story as to, look, this is the direction we're going. This is why we're going in this direction. Here's the data that will help support going in this direction. Here are some resources that you can use to also go in this direction. Because, and the reality is very simple in that, and I'll pick an arbitrary number, if we have 50 associations and 49 of them do the right thing, it only takes one to do the wrong thing and have success before the other 49 start looking around and saying, well, yeah. hang on, they're having success over there doing it a different way. We're just going to do it that way. And all of a sudden, the numbers are flipped. And we have one.
We're losing players to that one club. We have to start to shift to keep them.
Yep.
That's generally the real issue.
Yep.
The real problem that associations have is that is. I mean, we can do it.
From themselves.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Mm. So for us, I think that's something that I think I've taken out of this, and it's like, well, I think we can do a little bit more in this space to help out and sort of paint the picture as to why this needs to go down a certain path. A couple of the other ones I'll motor through really quickly. Equal playing time in the early years, tick.
Mm.
Like, get the kids on the court, get them playing, get them enjoying it, get them loving it. Nobody wants to turn up to watch their child play 2 minutes. Like, and that's from a parent or from a child perspective. And as a coach, I would suggest you've probably got a fairly guilty conscience if – you've barely played a kid in a game, because I know I certainly did.
And they're 9 years old.
Yeah, exactly. Like, give me a break.
It's a really, but yeah.
Not a chance.
And we all make mistakes too. Mm. There are times as coaches where we make mistakes on rotations. You maybe forget the rotation or whatever it is. Mm. That happens, as long as you front foot that, but it can't be every week.
Yep. So a couple of the other ones through here. What do we got? Consistent emphasis on learning over winning, which we've spoken about to this point, so that's fine. Combining technique and real game application. So you were talking about that before, Nick, like the gamification and the small-sided games and those sorts of things I think are valuable in that sort of space. Mental performance training focused on mastery over ego. Like, you don't need to move on to something just to make yourself feel better. Try and get the things you need to get right.
And that applies to coaches as well.
It does.
Like, success is not progression.
Yep.
Be good at what you're doing now.
Well, and how often do we hear... this offense isn't working, I'll put in another offense.
Oh.
This one isn't working, I'll put in another one. And all of a sudden the playbook's like 18 pages deep and wondering why none of them work. And so it's about mastering those one or two that you've got.
Yep. So, again, there are more to this. Like, again, I would strongly recommend go and read the paper and you'll see the rest of them. So principle number two is a team-first mentality. So, Nick, when we talk team-first mentality, what would that look like for a lot of our junior teams and the like that are involved in that space?
To me, I love it because it's something that I definitely try to preach early on in the season. I used to always play that. Remember that YouTube thing, Spurs Beautiful Game?
Yeah.
Have you seen that one? Yep. Where they have a favourite clip to show the kids, like, this is what basketball should look like. But team-first is really giving up a good shot for a great shot. You know, making the extra pass. It's not necessarily everyone scoring an equal amount. There may be one player that scores the majority of the points, but you have accepted that that is your role because you're putting the team ahead of yourself. Okay, it's less seeing highlight reels, which is all I'm seeing at the moment on Instagram, and it's more seeing team ball movement and off ball movement and stagger screens and things like that. So. That to me is team first mentality, putting something that's bigger than you above you.
Yep. And those, like, some of the points they mention here are like a recognition system for defensive stops, successful screens, extra passes during scrimmages, those types of things. Mm. So when we talk about gamification and small sided games in particular, that is like a scoring system that you can put in place. If you are playing like a 3-on-2 type game at your training session, you might get points for scoring, but if you throw the assist, you also get the points. Defensively, if it's not the person that gets the steal necessarily, it's the person that causes the steal. And it's creating that sense of team first, where it's not about me winning, it's about us winning.
Points for pointing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like I'm if somebody, yeah, yeah, if somebody makes a good pass and you score off of it, extra point if you acknowledge it. It sounds ridiculous, but it's such a big thing. But it's also watching, I love watching athletes, they may not have had such a good game, being happy for somebody who had a great game.
That's the best.
Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the ultimate reason for the sport.
Yeah.
And again, well, you know, when they're good people.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. Like, they're not worried about them as the player. They're more concerned about them as the person of a community. And I think that's what can get lost in sport a lot, is that we get so tied into the scoreboard and winning and losing. And don't get me wrong, it's a part of it and a valuable part of it, because people need to learn how to win and how to lose, because that is a skill in itself. But it is that whole team first thing. Can you do some work to make sure that everyone's on the same page? Like, can you get your team to be a cohesive team where everyone likes each other and they enjoy playing with each other and they want to turn up, because there's a social connection to what's going on as well? It's not about the highlight reels, as you were talking about, Nick. It is about a team that plays good basketball together. Like, and that's the biggest thing. They talk about it in the paper a lot, as the Balkans in particular. It is about the team wins or loses, the individual doesn't win or lose. And, you know, everyone plays, everyone gets an opportunity, and when they succeed, they all succeed. It's not one person succeeds, it's everyone succeeds.
So how has it shifted then, right? Because there was, you know, I would say 10 years ago, it was very team-focused,
yep,
right? And it's really, is it the introduction of Instagram and social media that has highlighted the extreme individual?
I think it might be. Like, there's some social media clout that comes with that, and I understand it. People like seeing clicks and likes and shares and all that sort of stuff go up and, you know, hey, I'm popular now. It's like, well, look, you might be online, but are you a good person? Does that go to people's heads? And is it a case of, hey, you're getting that, but I want that? So rather than try and chase that to get better, I'm going to try and tear you down to bring you closer to where I am. It's not that whole rising tide floats all boats. And that's my issue with social media in general, is that it's not about uplifting other people. It's about usually comparisons. And I don't think comparisons are healthy in that world in the first place.
We also have that issue that, on a side effect, we have kids reacting so they don't end up on the wrong side of social media. So, for example, sitting on split line and they don't want to go and help because they don't want to get dunked on, or and ended up on the right wrong side of the highlight reel.
Yep,
that's, you know.
I think it was Will Magnate was talking about it last year. They're like, oh, you know, you end up on a lot of posters because you get dunked on a lot. And he's like, yeah, it's my job. Like, my job is to go and challenge that shot. I don't get the blocks if I don't go and challenge it. So,
Mutombo used to speak about that as well.
Yeah, I think Stephen Adams did.
Yeah,
like it's. Yeah, it's part of it. Like, you have to go through it. But that is the team thing. Are you doing the right thing for the team, or are you doing the right thing for the individual? And so many times I think we get really concerned about, oh, I don't have enough talent, so I'm going to really lean into this individual and they're going to be my talent of the team. It's like, no, you've probably got nine other kids that could also help get this a little bit along the way as well. Like, do you need one person to score 30 points, or can you get 3 points out of 10 of your kids? I know which one's easier. It's, you know, you can find 3 points from every kid on your team straight away.
And if you don't, just going back on, if you're not playing a kid, why'd you pick them?
Yeah.
Like, seriously, like the whole thing on development, they need game time to practice the skills. So why are they on your team? Like,
different problem.
I think part of it, though, is because they're forced to pick 10.
Yep.
Yeah,
and
true.
And I've been, and for some reason, coaches.
Some have 12 now.
Yeah,
crazy.
Pick under 18s,
it's crazy.
12 is normal.
And for some reason, there's this idea that you have to have 10 so you can scrimmage at practice. And I don't know. I'm not an advocate for 10. I don't think, especially in, what is it, a 32-minute game? That's what we have on Friday nights now. 32-minute game. There's not enough time to rotate 10 through.
Unfortunately, it's predicting injury prevention, right? Like, well, if you have eight and you lose two, it goes to six. So
yeah,
I think
good.
That's the argument. But
good.
Now
everyone gets to play more. Like, it's, you'll be okay.
Except that one coach who doesn't play the sixth player. I know what you're saying.
But
yeah.
That sixth player probably will play because it's the other two that you haven't picked that are now playing big minutes in the twos or in the threes, as it, you know,
helping
as
you in 2 years' time because they've been exposed. Yeah,
that's my thing. And I understand the issues. Because obviously if you pick eight, that means there's then more teams because of the amount of kids, that it'll end up with more teams. therefore you've got to find more coaches, you know, understand all of that. But at the end of the day, it would make the kids better.
I think, yeah. I see what you're saying. I would still pick 10, just based on how long the season is. Someone usually goes down with the amount of work they do. I mean, I'm speaking like 18s because I've done that for the last couple of years. What I don't understand is the 12-player thing. I just don't get it because two players will not play. Well, and you can't get them in.
It probably depends a little bit on your experience as a coach. So yeah. Probably the more rookie you are as a coach, the less players you want to have. Mm. Purely from the perspective of it's one less thing for you to have to worry about. It's very easy to lose track at 10 players. But again, I think like the three of us have probably coached long enough now that we could manage 10 and in a pinch 12 if we really had to. Mm. Whereas if you are a bit more of a novice coach, you are probably in that space where you are struggling to keep up with what's going on, deliver player feedback, and then try and work out, geez, have I got that player in this quarter or not? Where have I missed them along the way? So that's the team sort of thing that I think sort of...
And that's assuming there's no foul trouble or something exactly. That happens that throws the whole rotation out.
But I do understand what where you're coming from. You want the players to play. Mm. Like, just play because.
Yep. Principle 3 is trained and incentivized coaches. We'll scrap that one for now. We'll come back to that towards the end because I probably anticipate we're going to spend more time on that one than anything else. Principle 4 is program continuity. So the continual bouncing between teams and conflicting coaching philosophies are missing crucial development opportunities. So you're looking for, or what this recommends, is programs that offer consistent coaching, stable teammate relationships, and clear development pathways to produce more complete players. And it's hard to disagree with that. I think the most stressful time of year for everyone is tryouts. Coaches are on edge, parents are on edge, players are on edge, your administrators are absolutely on edge as they're trying to make sure
they're more than anyone else.
Probably doing it tougher than anyone. But trying to find a way, and I've been a little bit anti skills matrices. I'm not really too sure on that one. Someone else can let me know which one I'm. I don't know that I'm confident it's not that one.
May try.
Yeah.
It took me a while to process that. Like, did she just say may try?
Yeah. But the more I think about it, the more it's like, well, maybe there's something to this. There might be something of can we have some like a skills milestone for each age group is something that they're talking about. Core drills implemented across all levels. And it's like, well, you know, try and get something that they're consistent and they're good at, that they see regularly, they can achieve some success in. The mentality of, hey, they need to have a whole new training session plan every single week with stuff they've never seen before, for mine, doesn't sit right. Like, I think there's place for, hey, give them two or three things they haven't seen before every training session and see if you can push it. But you also want a level of continuity, I think, with a lot of it. And I think about probably the most successful team I had was a team I had 2 years of 12s, 1 year of 14s, and 1 year of 16s, I think it was off the top of my head. So there was a fairly consistent check-in. And some of those kids I had for 2 years of 14s or 2 years of 16s, depending on what was going on at the time. But there is an element too of making sure that there is some continuity with that. And it doesn't mean exclusivity, as in if you're not in this team at the start, you can't ever be in that team at the end or anything like that. But it is amazing how many teams are built around friend groups. And this is not necessarily the VJBL space, more probably the domestic space. There are a lot of kids that just want to play with their friends, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And it's... Yeah, it is one of the reasons that I do feel like a lot of our sort of under 16 type players leave the sport, is they're no longer playing with their friends and they're put in an environment they don't enjoy, that they're not comfortable with. That it's just, why would you stay if that's going to be what it is? So I think there is a level where when you look at continuity in particular, that's actually really valuable for our players as to what it can be, you know, moving forward. So not telling you you can only have this team and you can only have that coach and those sorts of things, because everyone will have their different reasons for moving on and those sorts of things. But when you look at program continuity, that's the sort of the first thing that jumps to mind for me.
When you talk about sessions with the drills, you know, you don't need to change it up every week. The theme or the skill that you're teaching can remain the same, but you can change the drill to still deliver the same message. So we're not saying pick one drill and just or pick one session plan and just do it week in, week out. You can change what it looks like, but the message just needs
emphasize
to emphasize
something different.
Yeah,
like
big time.
You know, just because it's a 2-on-1 drill doesn't mean we're talking offense the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, we can talk defense.
But when you talk program continuity as well, that's where a matrix does become useful in that sense, because if And it doesn't have to be, you know, 20 pages, you know, 75 skills on each.
Oh, but it will be.
Yeah, like, and most of them are. Yeah.
But it could be, say, under 12s, by the end of the year, they have to be able to dribble pass and make a layup on both sides of their body. That's it. That could be it. And then at least from a program perspective, everybody's working toward the same goal.
Yep.
Then the 14s coaches take them, or if they go through with them, whatever it is.
Yep.
Then they've got their next level, so they've got that plus, you know, whatever yep. else it is. And I think where people get afraid of a matrix is there'll be some kids that never reach it, but it doesn't matter what you do. Like we've spoken about all kids being different and development, you know, happening at different times.
Or regress.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so it's not something to say you haven't done your job. It's something to say, here's something you can base your sessions around. It should be viewed as something to make it easier for the coach.
A bit of a tool is almost a check-in point. And the reason I've been probably anti them a little bit over the years, and I am starting to come back around to it, which is part of coaching, I guess, is because it's almost telling people they have to move on before they're ready to move on. Mm. And it's like, well, look, under 14s, they need to be able to make reverse layups. It's like, well, okay, your kids can't make normal layups, so don't worry about the reverse stuff. And this is where you sort of get into that introduce, refine, master type framework around it, I guess, for lack of a better term. But yeah, I'm starting to come back around, I must admit. So I think we may end up, sorry to add more stuff to our plate, Nick, but we may end up putting this together.
Don't worry, these two are very good at ideas, yeah. Terrible at follow through.
We'll see if we can outsource
this. I'll flick it to you and
personality tests.
Yep. Yeah, we'll see if we can get a consultant to do it for us. We have the ideas and we just outsource it. So the next one, principle 5, freedom to play. And this is one that I really like. And I'm conscious of how I frame this because when I see freedom to play, I think there are a lot of people that sit there and go, great, as a coach, I just roll the balls out and let them go and then I don't have to do anything after that. That's not what this is. I think there is a time, though, in your training sessions where it's like, hey, you know, we're just going to play like a little quick 6-minute game here. No rules. Go do what you do. Like, have some fun with it. Like, enjoy how you try and work it out. Like, I'm a big advocate. And it used to be part of our SDP sessions when we were sort of 6:30 in the morning. Part of the deal was you have to turn up and make 2 free throws in a row before you're allowed to start the session. That was the rule. And so I was always conscious, well, I might have to get here at 6 o'clock to make sure that players get half an hour in of shooting time to make their 2 in a row before they can start the session. Once they'd start the session, though, what they had to do in that time after they're warmed up and they've done all those sorts of things is they'd play one-on-one from the charge circle. And it would literally be both players face half court, one player in front of the other. Offense would just spin the ball out, catch it, and they had to try and find a way to score at the basket. That was probably a little bit too structured, but what it did do is it created a little bit of an opportunity for them to just trial and error some things that I'm probably not going to teach in the first place. Like, they try and give a little bit of a like backspin off on the ball off the top corner of the backboard to try and find an angle, and it forced them to use their pivoting a little bit more. Now they were starting to think footwork without me having to teach footwork. So I think there are ways that we can put them in positions where they have freedom to play, but we're still getting an end outcome as to what that looks like. So it's not a case of roll the balls out and let them go. And again, there is a time and a place where you might do that for a portion of your training session. It's like, oh, let's just see how this plays out. Like on that Mind Your Game podcast, LeBron was talking about, he used to play a game, I think they called it 21, where they had 4 people. One person was offense, 3 people were defense, and you had to try and find a way to score against 3 people. If anyone's seen NBA recently, that's kind of what NBA looks like anyway, so that's not exactly unusual. But, and his point I think is valid, that gave him the freedom, because he's not supposed to be successful 1-on-3, that gave him the freedom to trial and error some things and do some things that he wouldn't normally do and try and find ways to score differently, to defend differently, to be more physical, those types of things. So there are ways I think we can manipulate the environment. We're giving them freedom to play, but still with an end outcome in mind. And that's, I think, the challenge for all of us. So even if it was a case of your players get to design a portion of your session plan, and I know Zoe is shuddered at that one, but it's something we've spoken about a few times, and she's a little bit anti that, it'd be fair to say.
Well, yeah, I am, because... Yeah. I'm in a development space rather than a team space. All of my athletes, I can't sit here and say, make your session plans purposeful for each athlete and then give athletes who may not know what other people need or even themselves need, or they might not agree or whatever it is, and hand that over there. I don't have enough access to my athletes to give up that time, and they drive a long way, so I don't have time to give them.
Personally, I've had teams obviously the last couple of years. I'd probably be anti that as well. I really would, only because like I would create the parameter. Let's say we're going to do a pick and roll 3-on-3. Yeah. This is what it looks like, and then we start talking to each other about how we're going to defend it. Is the hard show working? Why is it not working?
Yep.
Well, this player's can't get there. Okay, what's an alternative? And then I would communicate with them that way, but getting them to create it themselves, like it's a big jump.
It makes you nervous. I completely get it. Like, yeah. I mean, no way am I saying this is what people have to do, but it is something to really consider. It's like, well, would you be okay with your players designing warm-up? Like, there was another coach I had not too long ago that was talking about, well, you know, I let them have the first 10 minutes of every session to do what they want to do in that 10 minutes. And if that is turnouts and 3-player weaves, well, that's what it is. You know, I don't like it personally. But
you know what that's going to be, though, 9 times out of 10? A game.
Maybe. And quite possible. Like,
yeah, because we deprive them of that. That's why.
But that's what they want to do.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily incorrect. Like, and if that's what they want to do,
but
cool.
The warm-up's a good one because you've kind of controlled it a little bit here.
You are. Yeah.
They know what they want to get themselves going, so the answer's probably going to be pretty good as well.
And better with seniors than juniors.
Yeah.
Because juniors were like, hey, we want to play knockout. And it's like, oh, can we not for a little bit? Like, it's
numbers. They want to play numbers. Yeah. In that game, they always no ask for that.
The numbers game. Yeah.
But even one of the ones is regular community pickup nights. For emphasizing fun over structure. Like, I don't mind that. I saw Diamond Valley over the last lot of school holidays had like open runs where it's like, you can come down. This is the time slot that this will be on. Just turn up if you want to play. And you just got to play with other people. So you had kids from the first team playing with kids from the fourth team, experiencing different things. I really like the idea of that. Like, I think that's, you know, could be commended for doing something different in that space, because usually you get to school holidays and it's all about camps. And it's like, well, actually, that may not be what our kids want. Like, some of our kids might want something really different in that space. Principle number 6 is smart development guidelines. So the pressure to specialise early in basketball ignores the fact that young athletes develop best when they follow natural growth patterns. Research consistently shows that the pair of multi-sport participation, proper off-seasons and age-appropriate training loads, these aren't just suggestions, they're a proven formula for building talent that lasts. We have spoken at length at this point about the need for multi-sport athletes. This is not a new message. Am a big believer in it. Zoe, you've been on Little Ass for a long time, and dance. Mm-hmm. They've been your sort of babies on this side. And martial arts have been the big ones. I agree. Like, I think they are very good starting points for a lot of kids in that sort of space. But the ability, and it was interesting listening to Steve Nash and Luca talk about it in particular on the pod. Like, Nash was a very good soccer player, Canadian, so played lacrosse as well, played a little bit of hockey and played tennis, but was obviously good at basketball. But he didn't really start playing basketball until he was about 13. Luca was a bit the same in that he was a soccer guy that sort of transitioned across.
Malik Lewis was a soccer guy too.
Really? Yep. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Loved it over there.
So why did basketball just grew and...
Just grew and he was good at it and, you know, it's a small population, so...
Yeah, true.
You know.
And so they spoke about it on the pod in particular about why are we forcing kids into a sport they don't necessarily like, and give them the opportunity to play everything and then let them work out what they want to play. And if it's basketball, which I would imagine it would be, because basketball is clearly the greatest sport in the world that everyone wants to play.
It's great, unanimous.
They'll stick in the sport. Yeah. 3 people in a room have agreed. So we're good on that. But it is. It's one of those things where let your kids try every sport and, you know, they'll figure it out along the way. And there'll be some sports that complement each other better than others, for sure. But give them the opportunity to do different things and don't over-specialise in something. Go and play a different sport. Like, but you could do that at your training sessions as well. The amount of NBL teams that start their training sessions with a game of indoor soccer is out of control. It is continual.
Dodgeball as well.
Dodgeball. But again, a little bit of fun.
Yeah.
Like, it's something different. We know what that training session is going to look like. It's going to look like basketball. Of course it looks like basketball.
Yeah.
Can you give them something else along the way and give them the opportunity to be different?
But also something they mentioned in that pod was about early specialisation, burning out kids.
Yep.
Big one. That's because what I picked up when you read.
Yeah, because it's just the same thing over and over again. And, you know, we've spoken about it on the pod a lot. You know, attention spans are getting shorter and shorter. So they need more things in their lives to stimulate them. and keep them invested. And the second they get bored is the second they're done.
But it's also they're moving from one thing to another with the amount they do in terms of just one sport, I think could be partially the issue as well. I don't know what the solution is, but more is not better. Better is better.
Yeah, you know? and that is part of it. Like, and I'm really conscious of what the basketball calendar looks like, and it is pretty much 12 months of the year. Like, it's, you know, we know that. And it is also a bit of an issue that there are times where we give kids time off the sport and they go and play basketball somewhere else anyway. Mm. And it happens continually. But I was only talking to a parent the other day, and they said, look, this long weekend coming up, they've elected not to play a tournament over that weekend. They've got two kids, around about a four-year age gap, I think it is, between the two of them. This is the first long weekend off they've had as a family since the eldest, who is now aged out of junior basketball, played in double bottom age under 12s. Like, that is a long time to be involved.
My brother told me, he's like, I don't have a tournament this long weekend. Do you want to catch up? And I go, when's the last time you had a long weekend off? And he goes, well, apart from Christmas, probably like 3 years ago.
Yeah, and it happens. And I'm not saying tournaments are bad, don't play tournaments or anything like that. Not at all. But just pick and choose when you want to have some downtime for your kids. And I find this one is, like, this time of year is a pretty good one. Cold, wet, wintry. Do you really want to be leaving the house? Probably not. Like, this is a time where you get a 2K tournament going between your team instead or something like that, where they're still connected. They still have that opportunity to go and do something else. Like, it's amazing. We used to have a bit of a rule when we went away with state teams. Like, you could bring an Xbox or a PlayStation or something like that because the kids had a lot of downtime anyway. And it's amazing how often we'd walk in, it's like, hey, how's, you know, the tournament going? Because, of course, they'd always have a tournament running. And they're like, oh, you know, this person's playing this one. And it's like, what sport are you playing? And they're like, oh, no, FIFA. It's like, you're all here in a basketball state team. You don't want to play basketball? They're like, no, we need a little bit of a break from it. Like, we just want something a little bit different. It's like, okay, cool. Like, it's great that you've recognized that in that sort of space. Can you do some cross-training with another sport? Like, is martial arts coming into the gym after you finish training? It's like, well, okay, can we get them to come in an hour earlier and do some stuff with our kids, you know, before their session starts and give them a little bit of a taste? Because in particular, I think this time of year where it does get a little bit harder to get up and about for games and training sessions, that break might be just the thing that you need to revitalize your group.
Well, and I think too, if you've not made, say, like for this weekend coming up, if you've not made the classic and you've elected to not play in any tournaments, just let kids be with their families. Like, and let families be families, because as you've mentioned, they don't get a lot of time to get that done. It might be a time for them to get away somewhere or just be at home and be together. Because, I mean, I know what it was like when I was coming through as a player, and I was one of four, and it was a logistical nightmare. but also often just ships passing in the night, because everybody was everywhere and, you know, doing different things. So
I was talking to a coach not too long ago that said, who is a coach whose kids played the sport, and they were a country coach, so they obviously did a fair bit of driving in the first place. And their thing was, I'm actually really grateful for the time I had in the car with my child. Like, because that was 2 or 3 hours of unfiltered access to just finding out what makes them tick, what they like, what they don't like, and those sorts of things. And I got to the point where AirPods were becoming a thing that stays, and like, nah, we banned the AirPods. It's like, if you want to talk, let's talk in the car rather than, you know, all the other stuff that goes
and
with
And if
it.
You're in a tournament and your team's staying together, like, ban them in the bus.
Yep.
The bus is the best memories that they will have, but if they're sitting there with their head all with their headphones in, they're not going to make the most of that. Like, ban it in the bus, and whoever's driving the bus, just let them have the music up a little bit.
Sometimes when they have that break as well, I quite often had this at Casey. It must have been like a cultural thing or something, but I would rock up into the office and I would see some of them scrimmaging with their mates, going back to the free play.
Yeah. Yep.
And it was awesome. And they would come over and go, Nick, do you want to come in? I go, nah.
Yeah.
And they're like, why? And I go, because you need a break from me. That's what the break is. You know, you need a break
and
from
I
me.
And I need a break from you. No. Yeah, yeah.
No, never.
But to be honest, if they get a break and they still want to play sport, great.
Awesome.
You've succeeded as a coach.
Let them choose,
what you've done. Mm. That's the thing. Mm. Let them choose it. They want to turn up and play. You've instilled a love and a joy of the sport for them. That's what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. But unstructured.
Yeah.
Unstructured. If you're giving them a break and they still want to go and do those pickup games and stuff, brilliant. Mm. If they go and get a trainer and pay somebody to work them out, not so brilliant. Like, because again, that's almost like a
it's like a structured session.
Yeah,
again, right?
Like it's like a process rather than just a joy. And so it just adds to, it's another thing to add to the pile that sort of fans the flame of burnout.
Yep. So principle 7, embracing mess and joy. High pressure environments are stripping the joy from youth basketball. The research points to a better way, creating spaces where mistakes are viewed as essential steps in development, where joy balances discipline, and where the messy process of learning is celebrated and not feared. If your players are playing in fear of you, you've already failed as a coach. That's the first step. Like, I'm not saying that you can't hold people accountable and you can't direct and you can't teach and those sorts of things, but if they fear you, that's not where you want to be as a coach.
And even worse than that. So I've done some courses for year 9 kids for community and club accreditation, and we speak about this a lot. Have you ever had that coach? And so many hands go up, and I go, what does it feel like? And then one kid would say to me, oh, you know, I'm always checking the inside of my shoulder just to see if he's about to say something when I make a move. So he's now second guessing himself. And then another kid, which scared me the most, he came up and he said, sometimes I don't want to go to training. And I go, is that because of you or the coach? And he doesn't want to answer, because even at that point, the player thinks that I'm going to go do something, which I would if he gave me the name. But like, if, you know, but this, that stuff right there, that's an easy fix for our culture to just undo all of that stuff. Is let them be messy. They're going to miss a layup. They're going to throw a ball out of bounds.
They're not doing those things on purpose.
Correct. They like, want to achieve success just like you do.
Yep.
And we got to understand that. Like, show a bit of empathy as well.
Yeah, the time to get upset with them is if they're not putting in any effort, if they're rude or, you know, those sort of more just general manners things, you know, like behavioural things.
It's people.
They're people.
Life skill,
yeah,
right?
Like, that's where you can really... I think you can really hold them accountable with a little bit of mayo. But like you said, if they throw the ball out of bounds, I guarantee that wasn't their aim. Like, coach them through it. It's an opportunity to coach them through it. And I understand as competitors, I'm a competitive person too, so we're standing on the sideline and we want to win and we want to be, you know, do all these things. And so we see that. The first instinct is to go, because we want everything to be great.
All the coaches back bend, you know, how we all go, as we lean back. We've all got, everyone knows what I'm talking about.
We've
got to
get videos.
we really do. He demonstrated that one very well.
But we do that, and that's again, it's adding to the fear. The one I really... it breaks my heart when I see it, when the ball gets either inbounded or outlet to a point guard and they look over at their coach to see what they're supposed to run. That just kills me, because that point guard's not learning how to be a point guard at all. They're learning how to be basically an extension of the coach in a bad way.
Yep.
And so, yeah, it's hard. I know we're asking a lot of our coaches, but keep in mind the level of fear that we instill in 10 to 17-year-olds.
It is still very much a culture around. It's almost like a badge of honor for some of these coaches. Oh, you know, I had a go at my... Like, you may think it doesn't affect them because they have a blank look on their face. They're affected. They're affected. They don't want to take the court anymore.
Yeah.
And I've said this in the past. That's my biggest fear, that a kid leaves the game because of me.
Yeah, well, I watch junior AFL, and like some of the ways that the coaches speak to those kids, it makes me really uncomfortable. And if I know, having nieces and nephews, even if they were to speak to one of them like that, I'd become that. Like, if they were like, even just nieces and nephews, not even my kid, I'd become that parent. And so I think sometimes that also gets carried over into basketball. And one of the main differences, I think, is obviously in AFL, you're on a massive ground. There's a lot of space. So when that coach does behave like that, it doesn't make it right. but the whole world's not hearing it.
Yeah, whereas, out
yeah, mm. in a stadium, you know, we've all heard that coach go off, and almost the entire stadium head turns to where it is. So it's adding another level of embarrassment to the athlete, and I'm not shocked as to if that's a reason they walk away, because who wants to turn up and be spoken to like that?
It is. So a couple of things they put in here, like mistakes framed as a learning opportunity, agree. Occasional fun sessions, including parents and coaches, agree. Like we've seen it a couple of times, whether it be like a Mother's Day or Father's Day, they play a practice game against them at the training session and those sorts of things. You know, I like that sort of stuff. I think that's a fun way to do things. Mistakes being welcomed. And I mean, one of the inspirations, which is really nice to see, is that they've referenced the Aussie Hoops program as a part of this as well, which is the welcoming environment for players to come into the sport early on. So it's great that that's being recognised as well. Principle 8, before we wind back to the coach one, life beyond basketball. So basketball is a laboratory for life skills. When programs intentionally developed character alongside crossovers, leadership alongside layups, they don't just build better players, they develop stronger people. The lessons learned through basketball shape success far beyond the game. And this is one that I think we really need to lean into as coaches, in that we are, yes, do we want to create talented basketballers? Absolutely. Nobody is denying that for one second. But ultimately, we need better people in society. And that is across the board. We need diversity of opinions and backgrounds and cultures and everything that goes with that. We need people that are going to be leaders when they go into their employment, when that goes down the road. We need people that are going to be carers. It's all going to come from what it looks like on a basketball court. And this is the greatest platform we have, is to teach life lessons to our players in this space. And it's amazing how often it happens. It's, you know, just, it was really a dumb thing a couple of weeks ago at one of your MPP sessions. So they were doing their S&C. No, it was a good thing. Like,
this remote. Here it comes.
But it was amazing, because you've always been big on, if this is too hard when you're doing your S&C, let us know and we'll get something that's a little bit easier. We'll regress a little bit. But if it's too easy for you, let us know and we'll get something that's a little bit harder. And one of the girls said, hey, I'm finding the push-up a little bit too easy. And I'm just saying at the corner of my eye, Nick,
yeah, I am a little not. Bit.
For those unaware, Nick is doing a push-up challenge at the moment. And
it's day one and it's not going well.
So one of the girls put her hand up and said, actually, I find a push-up a little bit too easy. And she got checked for her form and all that sort of stuff. And the coach agreed. It's like, yeah, like you got this down. So the increase in difficulty for her was, now you put your feet up on the bench and you do a push-up on like an incline as part of it. And everyone sort of looked at her the first time and it's like, oh, I don't really know about this. But then all of a sudden, like last week, I think we had like 8 girls that were doing it.
By the end. So they do a couple of sets normal, make sure they were all right, and then slowly it would build up. It was awesome.
And what we do find, and I mean, this has been my experience in coaching girls in particular, they are very conscious of when they put their hand up and say, actually, I'm really good at something, I need you to be challenged more in this space. They usually take a step back rather than take a step forward, in my experience. For her to say, hey, this is too easy, I need more. And all of a sudden, what that did to the rest of the group, because there are a couple of them that are like, oh, she's a lot better at this than I am. Why aren't I over there? Actually, I think I could be over here. And you can see the work that's gone in over the last couple of weeks are like, actually, I'm going to put some time and effort into this because I want to be over there too. That, for mine, one, great leadership to put her hand up and say, because she's one of the younger people in the group, to say, hey, I need more. But also for the others to not sit there and tear her down and just go, hey, good for you. And that was the universal feeling in the gym was, hey, how good's that?
And created an environment where they can learn a life skill.
And it's inspired other people to go, well, actually, now I want to do this too. Like that's when you talk about life beyond basketball. That is great for her because I have full confidence that she is now going to put her hand up at school and say, hey, this isn't making sense, or I need more. Like, what can you do for me in this space? That's what we want to create. Yeah, like, we need better people.
It's one of the things, one of my aims in coaching girls is I'm not good at this either because I've had 40 years of being wired in a society that basically tells girls to live in a shadow, you know, like it's sort of the second, and it's not just men, it's also other women. The second a woman or a girl puts their hand up and says, I'm good at this, it's on. She's arrogant. She's this. She's that. And it's awful. And so one of the things is making sure we celebrate each other, celebrate their achievements. And the girls have been unbelievable. And there was even, we were listening in, or listening into a conversation, there was a conversation happening next to us where those, you know, those social media that go out to VJBL games, they take video and then put it up.
I am aware, yes.
Yeah.
Yep,
And you know what? I'm okay with it until they don't manage the comments. And this is why we've got to stop until those comments are managed. We've got to stop giving it clout.
They need to just, you can't comment on it. Yeah. That's a really easy fix.
You can like it, yeah, no problem. That's it. But so a comment was made about one of the girls that was there, which was awful. It was an awful comment. And one of the other girls from the group on the Saturday got on there and defended her, which I was like, that is so beautiful. Like, good
and,
for you.
And absolutely brave.
Absolutely. Yeah, because really now brave. They can come after you.
Yeah. And you've put yourself out in the target now.
Yeah. And so we then had a conversation as a group about social media and, you know, how wonderful that was of that athlete to do that. But also then how that can fuel trolls and you know, going on to all of that. But a real proud moment for me of her saying, no, you know, stepping up and
looking after,
and
your
looking
mate.
After her mate. Yeah. You know, it was great. And all it was somebody trying to tear down somebody who is good.
There's a reason they're called keyboard warriors, right? Yeah. They hide behind it. They make these inappropriate comments.
But it leads to this, I guess, thought process of girls not being able to say, women and girls not being able to say that they're good at something. Or, like, I'm terrible at accepting compliments. Terrible.
She's fortunate. She lives with someone that doesn't give her a huge amount of them.
That's why I'm with Rob. He gives zero compliments.
In your defense, I struggle as well. That's why I got a job with Rob.
I don't feel I'm being painted in a great picture at this point.
Well, if the shoe fits. Yeah. But again, it's because of that. Because any time you try to, you know, poke your head up above, you know, sea level, bang, someone's there to take it off.
Yeah, that tall poppy syndrome is very real.
Yeah.
Like it's not unusual.
And obviously there's got to be a balance. You don't want to be somebody who excludes people because of, you know, your confidence or anything like that. And that's what we're trying to teach. But it's a problem and we've got to create those environments where it's okay to say, yeah, I'm good at that.
It's funny where you talk about the girls' side with their issues. Like the boys are a little bit different. Like they probably do have that aspect as well, but what they have more of an issue of is public speaking.
Yeah.
Amongst their peers, that for some reason they struggle to stand in front of their peers and have a conversation. I used to do words of inspiration. I think I've said this before as well, where they all come in and they just talk in front of the group just so they can learn to publicly speak. Because it's a big thing. I had massive issues with it early on in my coaching, standing in front of other coaches and other players. I was incredibly nervous. Sometimes I would freeze. So I had to work my way through it. So being able to be a part of like, okay, well, I'm going to get them started on that journey now helps when you can do it within basketball.
Well, and if coaches are looking for ways to create those environments, like that's a brilliant example of how you can help on the boys' side, on the girls' side. You know, when you ask them something about it, if something's good and they're reluctant to tell you, give them permission. Hey, it's okay to say that was good. It's all right to say that was good. You know, that's not a problem. Or if you hear little preface their comment, you know, oh, not to be arrogant or not to be up myself, but like, no, scrap that. What is it?
I've said to a girl basketball player once, you know, you're allowed to be right.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a look of shock. And it's like, because I'm confused. I'm like, you're allowed to be right. You know that, right? Like, if you have a better answer than me, you're allowed to tell me that. You know that, right?
But it's funny. Like, there was a girl on the weekend who I spoke to and said, hey, like, pulled her out of the drill. And it's like, really liked what you did. Like, that was fantastic. The use of the pivot was great. the IQ to make the pass, but how you made the pass. Like, she whipped a cross-court pass on a diagonal off the bounce. And it was just like, whoa.
Yeah, we all just went, ooh.
Like, it's, so I was having a chat to her. I'm like, hey, really good job. And she's like, oh, like, you're not going to tell me I've done something wrong. I'm like, mate, you've done everything right. But she was clearly wired that way. It's like, I'm not used to getting a compliment about this.
And,
like,
they think, oh, there's a catch here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Sometimes it's
sometimes you were good.
Yeah, exactly right. Which dials us into our last one that we've come back to, trained and incentivized coaches. Great coaches shape more than players. They shape lives. Yet our research reveals a critical gap between this truth and today's reality. The evidence demands a new standard, one where every youth coach receives appropriate certification, ongoing training, and fair compensation. Because when coaches are equipped to succeed, players thrive. Now, obviously, we've left this one for last because I was conscious this was probably one we were going to talk about the most, and I'm looking at the time, and Zoe got a meeting in about 20 minutes, so who knows how this will go. It could be just you and me, Nick, for the end of this one. The first one, required certification for all youth basketball coaches. Now, obviously, in Basketball Victoria's landscape, we have gone down the path of mandatory accreditation for any competition that we run. So VJBL, CBL, Big V, NBL 1. Okay, the amount of pushback we got on this when we went down this path was incredible. I was literally Victoria's most hated person when this came into play.
We still get that pushback, by
yeah,
the way.
Without a doubt. Yeah. Like, the amount of conversations I have with, oh, but they used to be a former player, they should be fine. And it's like, yeah, okay, they were a former player 30 years ago. The game has changed a fair bit since that point, and we have a responsibility to our players and the coaching and basketball community to make sure that we are up to date and we are providing them with a safe and welcoming environment that may not have existed 30 years ago. The vast majority of our former player coaches coach the way they were coached. And again, 30 years ago, basketball looked very, very different to what it looks like now. So from our end, I would like to see all coaches go through training. And that is every level. And Basketball Australia got a great course that you can do online on eTrainU that you can just sign up for that is like introduction to coaching. And it just gives you some real basic things that you can get sorted. There's another one there, like first 3 weeks of coaching. So even if you're a parent walking in for the first time, go and do that. That will get you at least a foot in the door where you're going to know, hey, what can I do? What shouldn't I do? How can I do this differently, better, everywhere in between? God forbid we put some time into ourselves to get better as coaches.
The thing that really gets under my skin about this, especially when, you know, we mention or past players are mentioned, and I obviously wasn't a great player. I was a good player. But there is still so much to learn. I came in thinking, as most women coaches do, oh my God, I'm going to get absolutely slaughtered at this coaching thing, coaching in VJL something very low. Those courses, there were things I already knew, of course, because playing, you pick up knowledge. You get to work with, especially when you play at the at a WNBL, NBL and above level, you get access to some of the best coaches. So you pick up so many things. The art of coaching is something you don't pick up through playing. The art of, you know, peer-to-peer conversations, yes, but the art of coaching is very different. You know, you talk about they were a player 30 years ago. They could be a player 5 years ago. They could be a player 2 years ago.
It's changing that
quickly
now.
Things are so different. The first thing that I think about is child safety laws. They didn't even exist when I played, I don't think. And now they have changed, I reckon, 3 times in the last 3 years.
And people who do the course are shocked. What do you mean I can't grab a player and just move him across the court?
Correct. Yep. So all these things are in here. And I get frustrated because I get thrown in the ex-player pool and I get frustrated hearing the stories of that being used as an excuse to not do the work to help with our most important people in the game, which are our kids and our athletes. They are the most important. You're not the most important. You are important, but you are not the most important. They are. And so if we are able to go through, give up a little bit of time to get ourselves a little bit better. One of the great things I picked up from going through courses was a network of other coaches. I already had a network of other players and ex-players. I didn't have a coaching network. But I went through...
I did the club course and network with Mike McHugh.
Right.
Like, yeah. Amazing pickup.
Above all else.
Absolutely.
That's unbelievable. Who you, yeah. You know, so...
Disappointing it went Mike McHugh and not me that took the association of the course that he was in. But that's okay. You know, different problem. For
I believe
day.
We already networked, yeah. If I remember correctly.
But it's... I don't know. I find it disappointing to hear the amount of pushback that we get on these courses, because just because you're a volunteer, I don't think it gives you the excuse to not do the best you can. And doing the best you can means knowing these things, knowing about the different learning styles and how to approach them and how to, you know, get the best out of each athlete, how to, you know, what these child safety laws. If you get nothing out of it from an on-court perspective, but you pick up all of that, win.
Yeah, how to deal with neurodiverse kids.
Win.
30 years ago, we'd just say, oh, that kid's a pain in the ass. No, and we wouldn't 30, coach them.
Correct. It's, and they'd quit.
Yeah. We want to keep those kids in the sport. We want to make it a safe. And look, to be completely fair, I deal with the bad end of these conversations fairly regularly, with usually someone complaining to me that I used to play, I know what I'm doing. And it's not even I used to play. Usually I get, I played footy as a junior, I know how to coach basketball. And it's like, look, little different, to be completely fair. But part of it is, and the argument got made to me not too long ago, there are all these great coaches out there that are ex-players that don't want to do it because they don't want to do the training. And my response to that is good. Like, if you're not prepared to be trained and you're not prepared to be educated on what the best direction forward for you, the kids, and the sport is, then you're probably not the person we want coaching. Yeah,
it's probably doing its job. The accreditation is doing its job if that's the case.
And we don't want it to be a barrier as such. We want to try and make it as easy as possible. Like, community coaching accreditation, 2 hours of your time.
I love and community.
If you have issues now, like I'm on staff for that. I get phone calls. I'm sitting in the car and they're like, sorry, mate, I just finished work. I need to sort this out. Yeah, I gotcha. Like, it's not even that complicated. If you don't know what to do, you can just call my work phone.
Yep. Yeah, but like...
not the personal one.
No, no, no.
Do you want to rewind that and go again?
Zero
work phone.
But the community course in particular, I love that one so much. I love presenting it. It's my favorite one to present.
It is fun. Yeah.
It is so good. I walk away from those with so much joy because they are our absolute angel coaches. They're generally our domestic level coaches or parents that have been thrown in the deep end.
A lot of them just say, oh, I've just... My daughter's got a team.
Yeah.
And if I don't coach, there's no team.
There's no team.
So they're just doing it for that.
So they're just trying to help. And to be able to then give them something that they can go away with and, you know, they're so grateful. It's such a beautiful course.
Well, and it puts a face to what they're dealing with too.
Yeah.
Someone else that has also been through it that can give a little bit of guidance. They're not just clicking through online training to say, oh, how good is this? You know, now I know all this stuff. They actually have someone they can sit there and ask a question of, and it's like, look, I'm dealing with this.
Yep.
Have you got any answers? And sometimes as the facilitator, we don't. But someone else in that course has gone through it as well that can sit there and say, hey, I had that same problem. Here's what I did.
But also...
It's a great network.
I've had people from all levels of courses that I've presented at, because I always say, you know, if you're having trouble, reach out. You know, so now if they've, you know, bonded with nobody in the course, they've at least got one person. And I've had people reach out who I've been able to, you know, have either a 10-minute conversation on the phone or go back and forth via email and help keep them in the sport. That's, for me, that is enormous. And I just think those that are anti-accreditation or want it to be all just, you know, online learning or whatever it is, that's not how our sport operates.
And at the very least, when associations are looking to select coaches, the fact that they can see their accreditation level, know that, well, at the very least, they can do this, this, and this.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly right. It makes a massive difference. And the level of comfort, personally, like I think for both associations and parents. But a couple of the other things they put in here, coach-to-coach feedback systems, promoting continuous learning. I like the idea of that. So coach mentoring, really on board that.
Big time.
The Basketball Australia program that Neil Gray's running is a big part of what that's going to look like and something that we're hoping to replicate in a bit of a larger scale.
Just go find someone and see if they want to do it.
Yep.
Yeah, some informal stuff would be great. Something we're looking to do, and I've started it with a couple of coaches already, they've emailed in and said, look, I just need help. Like, can you spare some time? I was like, yeah, no worries. Like, we'll get you like 20 minutes on a Zoom. Like, we'll just have a bit of a face-to-face, hit me with your questions. Here are some answers or some things that you can potentially look at and go away and do it. We want to try and open that up a little bit more for all coaches to be able to access that if they can, because not everyone has access to someone at their club or association that's able to help them out. So we are here as a resource. Like, if you need help, ask. Like, we are more than happy to help out with anything we possibly can. Feedback systems for players and parents on what coaching is, what it looks like, what is good coaching, when do you feel safe, when do you feel like you're being challenged well, those types of things. There's a whole range of things in there. One of the things that I really liked in here in particular from the Riga Institute, youth coaches receive the highest salaries, recognizing their critical role in player development.
I really like that. I'll go off of that.
Like, straight away. And even if you take salaries out, recognition.
Yeah.
Like, put your best coaches with those youth groups in particular. And sometimes your best coach is not necessarily the best tactical coach. They're just the best at getting everyone on the same page and learning and developing. School teachers are obviously great at this because that's the world they live in predominantly. But making sure that the best coaches go to that foundation level where they're being taught the right things the right way by the right people in the right environment. And that's really such a massive part of Latvia investing in their coaching. Now, I am a believer that coaches should be compensated financially, not excessively, but should at least be rewarded for the time that they're putting in to try and help an entire generation of kids coming through on this. But it's very hard to sit there and say that you should do that if you're not willing to do any training yourself or put any time into your own professional
big
development.
Yeah.
So for mine, I like the idea of getting young players being coached by great coaches in their formative years where they're going to make the decision on, do I really love basketball or is it just okay that I play, and what am I actually getting out of this?
But I think also too, it's probably a discussion we need to have as well about coaches' mentalities on coaching at those formative levels.
Yep.
Everybody wants to coach the 18 ones. Like, young coaches in particular, that's their drive. They want to go coach the 18 ones because, you know, that's going to be the best hit. They do that for a couple of years and all of a sudden they think, all right, I'm going to go coach in the NBL or WNBL. It's not how that works. Being able to reward coaches who do outstanding jobs in those formative years, so that, you know, your 12s and your 14s, I think is probably something we need to have a look at.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. Like, I think that's a really valuable part of it, and there probably should be more recognition for coaches that are in those formative years, because ultimately, if you get the under-18s wrong, you might suffer the consequences of that as an association for maybe 2 years before you can rectify it. If you get the under-12s wrong, you are wearing that for a decade,
yep.
Like, if not more, potentially. So not to mention the damage and the harm that you can do to the players and the kids in themselves. So that is the paper in a nutshell. I say nutshell, we've gone for an hour and 17 minutes. But I would recommend going and having a read of it. It's a
can
fantastic.
Can you put in the show notes?
I will. Awesome. I'll put a link in the show notes. It's
really
good.
Were you listening
at
the start?
No, he wasn't. But that's
well,
okay.
It was an hour and 17 minutes ago. So I'm still calculating how many push-ups I got left for that.
And it's a lot. So if there's anything you want more clarification on, if you want to have an ongoing discussion about this, more than happy to do so. Just email us and we'll come back to you with something.
You knew Marcus Aurelius.
That's not the drop I thought it was going to be.
I was going to say, who's been stoic?
No, yeah. No one here.
Definitely not me.
No.
Social split talk for this week.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
So this is a drop from the Healthy Sports Parent podcast, which I really like. It's an episode with Steve Magnus, and Steve Magnus is a fantastic coach educator, but also sort of thinker. He's in that Adam Grant space a little bit, but more in the running world than anything else. So this was an excerpt from the podcast that they had.
There's no such thing as an elite 9-year-old athlete. Nothing really matters until after puberty. Let's stop the madness. Those are your words exactly. So it's not just you saying that. All the experts agree about it. But club coaches are telling parents that their kid will fall behind if they don't do all the things at 8 years old. I recently had a commenter on social media tell me I was doing my kids a disservice by not doing travel ball until middle school, saying that they're going to fall behind. There's no way they catch up. So how do you advise a parent to balance the tension between the truth that there are no elite athletes at 9 years old and the pressure that club coaches are putting on them to start doing everything now?
I mean, that's the central tension of it. It is we can intellectually know it, I can sit here and tell you study after study shows the same thing. And even we don't even have to look at studies. We can look at, I don't know, the 7-year-old records for the 100-meter dash. And Usain Bolt isn't on that list, right? So there's a reason for that because, again, puberty changes things and all that stuff and too early specialization, which you can get into. But intellectually knowing that and then facing it with your kid and some coach or authority figure saying, like, hey, you want the best for your kids, don't you? Like, everybody else is doing this. Like, this is what it is. That pressure can kind of feel overwhelming. And what I tell parents is we've got to have the ability to kind of like zoom out and zoom back and say, okay, I get it in the moment. This feels overwhelming that I'm making the decision that, you know, determines my kid's future career. But the reason I put these things out there and say these things is for that perspective moment of like, it feels like a big deal right now, but it's not. It literally will not matter, right? It does not. And we have all this evidence, as I said, but like, you've got to be able to zoom out and see the big picture and say, okay, I get it. It feels like life or death right now if my kid makes it or not. But the reality is, it's just like a fear. And it's just like this thing in my head that is just ruminating and trying to push me that way. But like any other fear we have, it's driven by kind of insecurity.
So that's from the Healthy Sports Parents show. Would absolutely recommend going and having a look at the whole episode, but it is also a great podcast to follow along with as well. Parents and coaches, like, we absolutely endorse that. It's amazing how much of that resonated with what we deal with in basketball. And it was, again, interesting listening to the podcast with LeBron on that Mind the Game podcast. He was talking about he didn't really have an NBA trainer until like third or fourth year into the NBA. But he's noticing now a lot more like personal trainers want airtime. They want to be in front of the camera. They want to be known as the person that did this for this person that's now created them. And he's like, it's false. Like, it's all false. If you are a sports trainer, if you're a parent that's getting pressured to go and do something more than what you're capable of doing with your child, don't do it. Like, it's we're not going to create an under-10s Olympic team out of this. Like, that's not what this is supposed to be. Like, the Usain Bolt one, like, hit me
That was
hard.
The biggest one. Mm. That was, oh, yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. So Usain's not on, like, the 10-year-old sprinting, of course, like the greatest ever. So why are we trying to create professional athletes in under-12s? And we're not. Like, that's the reality of it. We shouldn't be. There are some places around the place. Hey, if you don't get into this skill development program at 8 years old, your child's going to be left behind. No, they won't. Like, they'll be fine. Like, will they be as advanced as the other kids in the next 6 months? Probably not. But in 3 years' time, they'll probably pick it up just as quickly. It won't be that big a deal. So being really mindful that we're not putting too much pressure on kids, families, parents to do more and more and more. Find out what your kid loves and push them in that direction. If you're going to push them anywhere, like, or let them go and work out what they want to do. And when they start coming to you and saying, actually, I want to do this, great. Like, now you know, now you can try and seek out as much as you possibly can around that as well. But just be careful is the biggest question. So if you are a parent listening to this and you need some advice on that, please hit up either Nick or myself. Leave Zoe alone. Like, she's got enough on her plate at the moment without dealing with this one as well.
She doesn't need another email.
Yeah, exactly right. So hit up Nick or myself, and we'll try and guide you in the best direction as we possibly can with this one as well. Because it is something we're super passionate about, is keeping our kids safe and protected in the sport and making sure that it is the fulfilling experience that we want it to be for them, but also making sure that coaches are doing the right thing. And we get the whole carrot and stick thing. Sometimes you need to be a stick on this one and say, hey, this is not right. And, you know, I see a lot of the personal trainers and the, hey, we're having open runs and, you know, we're going to film you and give you a mixtape out of this. And it's like, oh, this is not a good idea. Like, this is, you're just creating more problems. Like, Nick, you were telling me not too long ago about a player that got hit up on social media by a coach that said, hey, come in and do this workout. You know, what are the things that you want to work on here? And then didn't do any of it, but yeah, did nothing but do their own stuff, film the session, release their own content on it. And it's like, hey, look at how good I am as a coach. This is the trainer.
Yeah, just basically put what he wanted to put on there. He just needed him through the door.
Yep.
And then just, yeah, used it as a, look what I'm developing.
Exactly. And that's, I suppose, the danger in that we do have so many people that are looking to get into that space of, I'm a trainer. And it's like, well, look, does this player really need a trainer at this point? Like, would they be better off just getting a pickup game?
And do your research.
Yeah, it is. And it's not hard. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the amount of hyperbole that goes on out there about, oh, this player is going to be a Div 1 prospect. And it's like, probably. Like, but everyone knows that. Like, you're not saying anything we don't know at that stage. So, but the deal is you don't become a Div 1 player at 9. Like, just wait. Like, that's the biggest thing. Experience all the sports, have fun with it, but they don't need to be there.
I think I said it on the last pod, right? Like, they actually, the Sydney Olympics, they tried to figure that out. They tried, they did this extensive study and go, yep, turns out you can't do it.
No, exactly. Well, shockingly enough, talent identification at 9 doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you got to wait until they're 16, 17. They've gone through, you know, puberty, maturation, all those sorts of things. And then you can work it out from there. The amount of kids that have peaked at under 14s is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, they exist, you know. So, for mine, don't stress about being left behind or being left out or anything along those lines. It's going to be okay, parents. Just keep your kid happy, healthy, and enjoying the sport, and we're all good in that world. Nick, thanks for jumping in. Zoe has made a very hasty exit, but she did that very stealthily, if nothing else. But coaches, thanks very much for listening. All the details will be in the show notes, but by all means, contact us if you want more information in that world, and we'll catch everyone next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.